Welcome to One Planet, One Place Radio Show. The show for the human spirit. Brought to you in conjunction with the Evolutionary Business Council. Now, please welcome your host, author, international speaker, and growth coach, Simon Jordan.
Well, today we've got another fantastic guest. I always say this. Well, one day I'll probably say, now we've got a really boring guest on today. Don't know why I'm going to bother. In fact, that's it. End of the show. Goodbye. Now, the lady I met, I'm going to introduce to you soon. You've probably read the profile if you've been on the site. And a lady called Rioc Edwards-Brown. And I was at, it was an IRG event. And you've probably met, I've interviewed a lady called Debbie Arnold, who is one of the founders of IRG. And IRG stands for Inspiration and Reinvention Cruise. Anyway, met Rioc there and was fascinated by her story and where she's come from. And as you know, you guys know, this is about inspiring people, inspiring stories, and Rioc is definitely an inspiring person with a very inspiring story and a real heart-moving story as well. And this is what it's all about. This show is about the human spirit. And I was just saying, you know, forget all the stuff of the Kardashians and all this fake celebrity or whatever. The real magic is in the real people, the human spirit and the human stories. That's where the real stuff is, I believe. And I'm sure if you're regular listeners to the show, you'll agree as well. So let me just introduce you. I've got her bio here. And I don't think it does it justice. I really don't. It does. The headline is, Rioc's son was shot and stabbed in school, but she didn't want revenge. So just contemplate that a moment. Rioc's son was shot and stabbed in school, but she didn't want revenge. As you're listening to that now, if you think about your son being stabbed, if you've got a son or someone close to you, what would you feel like? So Rioc, she's a social entrepreneur, and she decided to give something back to the UK community. With 16 years in TV as a media campaigner, she set up this company called So You Want to Be in TV to provide free employability skills to diverse and disadvantaged members of the community who want a career in television. I'm going to talk about her journey, but Rioc is living proof that you can come back from terrible adversity and triumph. You not only learn from her considerable experience, but about the importance of listening and helping others to self-heal. She highlights how she fought back after her son revealed the reason given by the perpetrator for attacking him was that he hated him for having two parents at home. So get that. I mean, what kind of situation for a child to hate someone the same age as him for having two loving parents? I mean, this is awful, but we're not. I want to upbeat it a bit more. But Rioc, welcome to the show.
Welcome, thank you.
So, I mean, you've just. I want to go back to when this all happened. Your son being shot and stabbed. You had just been diagnosed. I'll let you talk about this.
Well, it was February 2009, and probably the best way to put it was that I simply hit a brick wall. At the end of 2008, my son had actually left full-time education. He'd become a NEET, and this was on the back of this stabbing incident. And by the time we got to February 2009, my husband had suffered a nervous breakdown as a consequence of what happened to our son. Within the same month, I was also diagnosed with a brain tumour. And it just continued. So February 2009 is really where the story begins.
So, okay, the people say it always comes in threes. I mean, you know, they say you wait for a bus and then three turn up. But heavens above, I mean, okay, internally, how did you deal with that? Do you know how you dealt with that? All this going on, you know, your husband, you're thinking, no, I need you now, but you're going through a nervous breakdown. Did you feel, well, that's selfish of you, we don't have time for you to go for a nervous breakdown? What were your emotions?
I mean, I'd like to say it was like that, but it wasn't. I mean, I'd probably describe it as certainly when those words left my son's mouth that morning in our kitchen, as desperately just trying to stay on my feet. Because I remember thinking, Rioc, this is not about you. This is about what your son has just said, and you just need to stay in place and listen. And then I have no idea what you're going to do on the back of that. But it just completely took the wind out of me. It took, you know, everything to just literally stand upright.
So what did he say?
We were in the kitchen, and the stabbing event had already taken place, you know, as I say previously, at the end of 2008. He was no longer in education because, in fact, he was actually expected to go back into the classroom with his assailant. And we were, you know, struggling, I'll say that now, because he'd become very withdrawn. very angry, and I simply felt that I was losing him on another level.
Yeah.
And we just happened to be in the kitchen together one day, and he wasn't looking at me at the time. He was facing away, and he sort of said, "Oh, Mum, do you want to hear the reason why this guy stabbed me?" And I remember just thinking, "Oh my, what do you mean? The reason? I thought that." You know, I hadn't stopped to think of the reason. That doesn't make any sense. I was trying to deal with the stabbing. Mm. And I said, "Run that by me again." He said, "Yeah, shall I tell you the reason that the guy revealed why he stabbed me?" And I just remember thinking, "Oh, no, I really don't want to hear what's coming next." And with that, he said, he told me the real reason that he stabbed me and wasn't for my trainers or my iPod. He stabbed me because he hated me for having two parents at home. And I just felt...
Isn't that sad?
I cannot describe what I felt, because I'm a mother, and I suddenly thought, well... What on earth was that child going through? Mm. Where was he in his life? This in no way excuses what happened to my son, but my goodness, where was he in his life that he felt the only alternative he had was to hurt my child because he didn't have the very things that he craved?
But he, and what happened to him? What happened to the perpetrator?
Well, I actually then began to dig a bit deeper because this begged a bigger question, okay? And this also was enlightening to me because I had actually got quite soaked up into the media soundbites around young people, you know, hoodies, dangerous, all horrible, don't go anywhere near them, don't touch them with a barge pole. And I thought, no, I need to put my TV hat on and I need to do the investigative side. Mm-hmm. And so dug a bit deeper, and third party, we discovered that this young gentleman was at home alone, apparently, trying to bring up a two-year-old sibling. Mm. Apparently there was no father figure and mum was having to work all the hours. And so effectively, from what we gather, he saw my husband and I bringing our son to things like sports days, which he attended alone, parents' evenings, some of which he apparently attended alone. And this was the premise by which he then undertook the attack on our son. Mm. You know.
Just, it's awful, isn't it? I mean, it was in Peckham, wasn't it? That's where you were.
No. I'm originally from Peckham, but the area is in Southwark. I haven't named the school, and there's a reason for that. The school has since turned itself around, and I'm a huge believer in, again, forgiving and moving on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, forgiveness is such a huge thing. As I've talked to, interviewed a number of two ladies, Shonda Perron, who was involved in this project. I should introduce her, actually. She's doing this project called Project Forgive, and it's a film. And that was brought about because a very good friend of hers was his wife and two daughters were mown down by a drunk driver, and they then found out the drunk driver was also a good friend, and it just the whole thing from that forgiveness. I mean, how have you forgiven him then for, and has your son approached that forgiveness element?
For me, it was unequivocal. I had to forgive. If there was any chance that I could move on past that horrific moment in the kitchen, I would have to forgive. I've experienced personally a chapter in my life when I literally woke up every single day full of anger and hatred, and it almost killed me. You can see the size that I am now. I'm certainly not a skinny bitty, but let's just say
you're not big either. You're very slim.
I'm covered then. I think that's a nice way of saying it.
You're not at all.
Back then, I literally shrunk in stature and size and everything, because looking back now, I was consumed with so much anger, resentment and hatred over a particular situation that had taken place previously that it was killing me softly. Mm. And I remember when I got out on the other side of that, thinking, I can never go back to this place.
Yeah.
So if there's anything I'm going to learn outside of this, if there are options on the table, take the route for forgiveness. Because at that point, you stop carrying that thing forward and you're then able to start to move on again with your life.
Stunning. I've got to get you involved, because she's doing the film on this, and she will be touring. And I'm sure she would love to have you on the film as well.
Okay.
Brilliant. So you've gone from there and you decided, instead of getting... Well, actually, let's talk about the brain tube. What was the time difference between the shooting and then you being diagnosed with the brain tumour?
Well, the first incident happened at his initial secondary school that he was within, and this took place in the earlier part of 2008. And I swiftly, and I realise now, I made quite a big error. I then moved him from that school into another poorly functioning school. And this was really out of panic, without thinking my way clearly. And within a week and a half of starting there, the first stabbing incident took place. There were three in total at that particular school.
But they weren't him. There were other people being stabbed.
Different people stabbed my son on three separate occasions, and there was also one shooting incident. So there were four separate incidents in total. Oh, and this all took place in 2008.
In 2009, you were then diagnosed?
I was then diagnosed with a brain tumour.
Do you think that that was linked?
I'll rule nothing in and I'll rule nothing out. It was certainly still a shock and a huge surprise, but I think we carry stress in different ways. Mm. And who's to say? Because when they looked at me for my genes and whether this was within the family, and it wasn't. They looked at me for other particular, possible causes, and I didn't match up after tests. And then they ventured forth on the possibility of stress, and I said, sign me up for that.
Mm.
And so, without wanting to say, academically, did stress cause my tumour? Mm. I won't rule that out.
Yeah, well, it's such a massive shock like that. Who knows? And how do we know that how the body deals with it?
Mm.
And it deals with it. I know there's real traumatic episodes in my life, and I've broken out in a rash.
Mm.
So I know when it was my children and my ex, it was a big thing. So yeah, maybe that manifested. I'm medically trained. So okay, so you've dealt with that. So instead of getting revenge, mm-hmm. and being angry, which the human spirit is to, you want to protect your child, so you want to go out and gun that one. That's a horrible term. But basically, take out the person who did this, caused this pain. But you decided not to. Using your skills, you've then created So You Want to Be in TV. So tell me a bit more about that, because it's a fantastic, brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I felt strongly that there was something to be learned, and this is starting with me first, because it was obvious that although I had a very close relationship with my son, as does my husband, that we really had no understanding of what he was going through in his everyday life and the pressures that youngsters are under, in this day and age.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to have a greater understanding of young people in the community. I didn't know where to start, and then suddenly it dawned on me, why don't you start from your skill base, which is TV, broadcast television, and there is a difference between online and broadcast, but ours is broadcast. And I thought, maybe if I went out into the community and spoke to young people, that they would be the best, most expert at telling me what their needs actually were. Mm. And I felt that by giving something back, because this is the other thing, you can have something happen to you, but if you can get some sort of perspective on it, so enough to understand that you're not the only person this has happened to, you're not the only person that's going through this, all I can say is that by actually giving to others, you will find so much joy in that, that will be another pathway to recovering and moving on again with your life. And so I went out into the community, and the two really important things came back from that was that young people were saying that they lacked social mobility and economic mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, again, how can I best answer that? And I thought, I wonder if I could actually utilise the skills that I have, package them in some way, and give them back to the community that would allow them to have a toolkit to advance on those two particular criteria. And so what I set up was a social enterprise. And I called it So You Want to Be in TV for obvious reason. And what we basically provide are three core services, which is consultancy, training and recruitment. And we actually answer two particular needs, one from the industry itself that says that it's underrepresentative, of diversity and young people at that. Mm-hmm. And also the community that were also saying that they were very interested in starting a career in TV but didn't think the industry wanted them and didn't know where to start.
Yep.
And all we do is just simply bring them together.
I remember the when you did your event at BAFTA, and who was the girl? What was her name? And she was helping.
Oh, Holly.
Holly, was it
Holly? Yeah, Holly.
Cockney as you come, absolutely brilliant. What a sweet, a real diamond. That was amazing. I mean, her story. She was that was very impressive because she stood up.
Yeah.
And she was, she was incredibly confident, but she was saying she couldn't, didn't have the courage to do anything before.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
And what I loved about all these, I think what I love about the whole thing, you're doing this, and you don't make any money out of it at all.
No, I'm a volunteer on my own program.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is. So, tell me about, one of the stories I want to mention, you were walking down the road and there was a guy in a car?
Ah, yeah. Well,
that story. Tell me about that.
Well, part of the work that we do is we have quite an extensive outreach program. So that takes us to all far-flung sorts of places in London. So we'll go to youth offending teams, for example, or we'll go and see bodies that are to deal with kids in care, and we'll also go out on the street because that's where our communities are. And on one of my walkabouts, I happen to, you know, come across a young gentleman, and pretty much as is, I'll just wander up to people and say, "Watcher, you're right. What's going on?" And people, you know, want to start and have a conversation, and we talk. And I met this young gentleman, and you know, I said to him, "Okay, hi, how are you? What are you doing today? Why are you here?" And he immediately turned around and told me what his name was, Christian name, and then proceeded to tell me that he was a drug dealer. And one of the things that I think stood out right from the get-go was how utterly polite this gentleman was. And how entrepreneurial he was, because he proceeded to tell me that he was earning between £2,500 and £3,500 a week, was very happy to show me where he kept his gun in the dashboard of his car. And I know it sounds crazy, but one of the things that I said I was going to do on this learning, this journey of learning, was that I was actually going to listen. Because it was obvious that while I was talking with my son, I wasn't listening.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware of the life that he was leading outside of our home. And the things that he was going through. And so the initial thing when he introduced himself as a drug dealer was that the mother in me came up, and I was about to say, "Oh, but I can save you."
No, you don't want to be doing that.
But I remember saying, if you're going to learn anything from this, you're going to listen. And the one thing that came out of that conversation was that he was very, very, very aware of what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Look, I did not have a family unit. The sort that you have, that never happened for me. So the only family I had were the people on the street that took care of me,
better
known as a gang. They fed me, they clothed me, they kept me good." Now, he then said that he readily accepted that he was going to die prematurely. He knew all of that. And the next thing he said was that, "Ryok, you cannot save me. You cannot change my course." And that's what I needed to listen to. I was also struck by the fact that if those entrepreneurial skills could have been tweaked just slightly, just where this guy could have headed. And he was very aware of that. But what he said was that this, you know, path had been set, the cast had been dyed, and this is it. This is really where it's at. But because I kept on listening and I kept pushing down, you know, this whole thing that kept coming up in me, wanted to say, "Oh, but what about this? And oh, my goodness, you shouldn't." Because I kept on listening, he then turned around, and this is where the gold was at. He then turned around and said, "Ryok, however, there's no hope for me. But I would really hope that you would be around for people like my two younger brothers, who I definitely don't want to go onto the same path that I have." Wow. And that was the moment when I thought, well, right, Ryok, this is what this shape is going to take, where you're going to have a place that young people can gather at, that they can get some employability skills, that they can get a toolkit to kind of move themselves on. And if you will miss the gold, okay, and that's why I say, you know, if you listen, the gold will follow enough to actually then give them that impetus to then move off successfully along a newer pathway. If you're not listening, you've missed it.
And I'll talk a lot about that. People don't listen in their own lives. They don't. They're just so busy rushing around. They don't stop and listen for the signs, whether it physically, mentally, external. People showing you the way, you know. And so what happened with his two brothers, two younger brothers?
I haven't met them personally, but it was just that thing that he set in my mind, that there was a chance that I could work with, you know, youngsters of the type that he described, and I felt that quite confidently that I could, and that one of the things that we would do is that the service and the way that we operated would be like a blank canvas.
Yeah.
As long as you had an idea that you wanted to do something with your life, as long as you were quite sure that you wanted to try something, then those were the only two caveats. We didn't require anything else. And then you come in, you work hard. It's a meritocracy. This isn't about some people talk about, you know, just handing jobs out to people on the plate. No, we're not really about
that.
You
make them work hard, don't you?
Oh, yeah, but they have to work hard, because that's the reality. So you can attain the standard and actually go out there and take part in the real world.
Yeah. Now, what's the... Okay, from your journey so far in this, what are the main things that you've learnt? Because it must have been a huge learning curve.
I mean,
One I can get from you at the moment is acceptance. I mean, not being that mother, "I can fix it, I can fix it." There's a lot of people out there, "I can fix it." Well, so there's fixing and listening, and that's where the gold is. I love that. I love that saying. I might use that. Listen, you'll find the gold. What are you talking about?
Listen and the gold will follow.
But what are the other things you've learned on this, you know, this amazing path? I wouldn't say it's a part. I would say it's Mount Everest. Dean, with all the stuff that you've dealt with, I can picture you with an ice axe climbing up that's in flames. The mountain's in flames as well.
Well, you know, just by that simple act of listening, you pick up so many useful tips and so much useful information and actually answers. Because what I've found out is that the community have the answers. You know, and this idea of going out to save the world, it's well-intentioned, but it's woefully misguided. And once you actually start to listen, then you'll get the answers that you need to move things forward. So the biggest thing that's come out of this for me is that I've developed listening skills I didn't know I had. And I'm not just talking about the thing that you do when you've got two ears on the side of you, on either side of your head. I'm talking about where you're actually listening with every part of your being. You know, and listen enough to just stop long enough not to want to bring in what you think you know. And let me be clear about this. There's no sort of wooliness around what we do. You know, there are structures, there are boundaries, we have a certain expectation of behavior, and these must be fulfilled and met, and we have that. What I'm actually talking about is that the whole point by which we then operate is that we listen, hear what the issues are, hear what the possible answers are, and then facilitate that. And it's had a much more positive outcome than me going in there trying to save the world.
Do you find that there is a common strand amongst the kids you work with? I mean, they're obviously in different backgrounds. Is there something that's a commonality which brings them all together?
Well, people use the word diverse, and I'm not even sure if most people actually understand what the word diverse is. And the biggest thing for me is that I have been really shocked by all, because I'll tell you who we work with, because again, blank canvas. We work with unemployed young people, those that are in education, out of education, ex-offenders, homeless, in social care, ethnic minorities, white working class. Just come along.
Everyone. Pick a mix.
There you go. And the interesting thing is that we have worked with kids that have come from double income homes, and we've worked with kids better known as Latchkey. And we work with kids that are more like the drug runner story, and it goes on, and kids with qualifications, kids without. The biggest thing that I still find shocking is a number of people, because we start an initial conversation, we speak to young people on the phone before we invite them down to a studio-based session, is a number of times they keep turning around and saying, Ryok, do you know you're the first person that's ever listened to me?
Wow.
Okay?
Wow, yeah.
Degree, no degree, you know, prison sentence, you know, double income, no income. You're the first person that's ever listened to me. Now that's free. And we are robbing ourselves and our future generation by not listening.
I was talking at an event for kids. There was about 150 kids, young adults, they weren't kids. And it was an inspirational talk. It was a 45-minute thing. And one of the teachers came up and said, oh, there's a particular girl, she wants to be, I'm not going to say who it is or say names, but she wants to go into a certain industry. And I said, well, what's the problem? She said, well, she just doesn't think she could do it. So the teacher finally introduced me to this young lady. And I said, so what's the issues? And she said, oh, I want to do this, but I don't think I'm clever enough. And I said, what kind of crap story are you telling yourself? And I said, you've got, and it was just because I was spending a little time with her and again, listening what she had to say. She burst into tears, and it was, and by the end of it, she was beaming, and I think that's what it was. Someone was actually taking an interest, and it showed her teacher as well. The teacher had gone out of her way to come and talk to me about her. She really felt that, wow, there are people out there who care for me, and that's all. That's what makes a difference.
Exactly.
You know, there are the six basic human needs. You know, love, connection, charity, and all the other ones. I won't go into it, but. Showing love, and I put something on Facebook the other night, actually, love can hurt, but without it, you know, the world isn't worth living. You know, it's the most powerful force in the universe, but if you just show that bit of love. So okay, the listeners to this show, what can you do today? What can you do? An act of random kindness, you know, it's doing what you've done, come from something so traumatic to having, you know, Ian having a nervous breakdown, to you having a brain tumour, and to doing this off your back. I mean, you're the black Mother Teresa, you know, don't you? That's what it is. You've got a better stature and you're taller than her. But no, it's amazing. It's beautiful, and that's why I love meeting people like you who are giving something back. And there's no I mean, it's something my dad used to say. He said, if you're not worried about the kudos, anything can be achieved. And you are a living embodiment of that.
Well, you know, again, I'm a mum, and even if I wasn't, I'm a member of society. I'm a human being. And the last time I looked, there are more good people out there than bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bad things obviously get talked about, and one bad person can hurt as many as they care to. But, you know, when you sort of sit and listen amongst the young people, they're just really talking about and having the same needs as we did back in the day. They're in a different type of society, as each generation is. Things are faster paced. We seem to have more materially, but we seem to have less time, and so it goes on. But then when you sort of see, you know, young people come up to you and, you know, really well qualified, but they can't look you in the eye. They come with their hands planted deeply within their pockets, and they're staring at their toes. And almost, you know, they can't even, you know, function enough to speak. That tells a whole, you know, new story, because that would be the thing that you would most likely think was, you know, from a young person from, as they say, you know, high rise, low income. But we're seeing it across all classes, and we're seeing it across all creeds, colours, and so on. And so that's telling us a bigger story. It's not what the media soundbites portray. And I mean, one of the things that was interesting was that while we had our ear to the ground and the community was actually talking about the things that they were unhappy about, and I say this as the whole community, including the youth, we actually heard about the riots 9 months before they happened. Now, we're not wizards or seers. I don't do anything like that. I don't look into the future. I can't predict anything. But if you go and you really listen, the gold will follow.
Maybe that's, maybe if there's any members of the government listening to this radio show, maybe you should get your rest of your cabinet to listen to this radio show and listen. You know, you don't know it all. Vote you in and listen to what we've got to say. So where is, what's the next step?
Well, we did this event down at BAFTA, and that really was a turning point because the television industry turned up, and we're very, very happy about that. And we've since had a very large independent broadcast company decide to come in and sponsor. We're always looking for sponsors, by the way, but they've come on board with sponsorship, and that will allow four individuals each year to go out on a rolling program of work experience. And they've also come up with one job role to start with, and we're extremely happy about that, because that's five more individuals that will effectively be working their way towards permanent work, because that's the other key thing as well. We don't mind the mentoring, we don't mind the training, but we're really not here to make ourselves look better. There has to be tangible work at the end of the stuff that we do. I mean, at today's date, since May 2010, when we took on our first bit of sponsorship, we've put 259 young people through our programme. And 54 of those, they've actually been mentored long term. And of that 54, 34 have gone into the industry. 44% of those are specific to jobs. And that's what we're looking for. It's all good doing the talk, and, you know, a very nicely printed brochure, thank you, and lovely offices somewhere in the West End. But we're not really interested in that. We're actually saying it's grassroots, it's built from the community, working with young people, you know, managing their expectations. It's about reality, okay? And then marrying it up with the industry and getting tangible work out there to address the massive youth unemployment problem we have.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people find out more about this? If someone's listening to this and thinking, we'd like to get involved with this, we could do help out with sponsorship, where would they find out more about this?
Well, we've got a website, and it's very easy. It's www.soyouwannabeintv, literally spelt out, .com. So it's www.soyouwannabeintv.com.
Thank you so much for taking your time out today.
It's been a pleasure.
You know, and it's great. And again, you know, look into this. Listen to what's, you know, listen to this again, but the words that keep, what I pull from this is about listening. The gold is where it's the listening. And it's true. You know, in your relationships, anything. And I remember I was talking to someone last night about it. Guys, when women come home from work or they've had a stressful day, guys will go, okay, right, what do you want to do? You want to do this, 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 and then the woman will go, no, and don't you tell me what to do. And it's, I used to do it with my ex-wife. Okay, do you want me to listen as a man or as a woman? Because as a man, I will gouge you from A to B and give you the, right, you need the axle grease here and that there and a bit of whatever. Whereas a woman's, okay, I'll let you work it out yourself, because that's all you want to do. You want to talk about it. But it is about listening as well.
Yeah.
And you're so right. So listening is where the gold is.
Mm.
So, guys, thank you very much for listening to the show. And, Riok, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
So, until next time, stay tuned. We've got more amazing guests coming up. Do check out Riok's website. So, you want to be on TV, the link will be on the site. And until next time, take care and go out and listen. There you go. That's what I'm going to say. Just go out and listen. So, thanks a lot. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to One Planet, One Place radio show. To make sure you don't miss a single episode, please subscribe on our website or via iTunes. Simply search for One Planet, One Place. And if you've enjoyed this show, then don't forget to share it and click the like button. Thank you for listening.